Daddy, where did the blue sky go?
And a very warm welcome to all of you on the final show of the week. And on today's show, we welcome back Andrew Johnson from the website checktheevidence.com. Of course, you remember Andrew, who spoke to us about 6 or 7 months ago about the whole business of 9/11. And I'm just going to touch on that at the end of the show. But on today's show, we're going to be talking to Andrew about some observations he made regarding commercial jets chemtrailing. Now, the evidence isn't conclusive, as we will discuss. That inevitably is up to you to decide on what you want to believe. But the evidence is building. But this all started actually way back in 2002 when a UK paper, The Guardian, reported that a government report release provides for the first time, it says, a comprehensive official history of Britain's biological weapons trials between 1940 and 1979. Many of these tests involved releasing potentially dangerous chemicals and microorganisms over vast swathes of the population without the public being told. Now, whilst details of some secret trials have emerged in recent years, the 60-page report revealed new information about more than 100 covert experiments. The report revealed that military personnel were briefed to tell any inquisitive inquirer the trials were part of research projects into weather and air pollution. So, when we fast forward to 2012, it all seems to have been forgotten, especially by the mainstream media. It seems like there is a voluntary denotice on all chemtrail activities. Well, Andrew Johnson, he's an investigative journalist and much more. He runs the website checktheevidence.com, and he's been trying to gather evidence to prove or disprove the use of commercial passenger jets that have been used to spray the skies with perhaps or probably toxic chemicals. Andrew, this episode of the chemtrailing goes back, in this particular instance, goes back to 2007 when you first noted these trials. And really, the first thing is, what really brought this to your attention, that it was a passenger jet opposed to the unmarked planes that we're accustomed to seeing?
Well, it was actually 2005 that I first really...
Right.
And began to sort of sit up and pay attention, because I've got a picture on my website buried somewhere in the archives, and it's basically I was looking out my window, sort of sunset in June, 9:45 in the evening, you know, very quite close to the summer solstice, and saw this grid of trails in the sky, literally like an Oughts and Crosses grid, you know, and I thought, nah, that's what's going on with that. There's something going on there. I didn't see the planes which made this grid,
right.
You know, so I couldn't identify whether they were marked or unmarked or what have you. But I thought there's something going on with that. Mm-hmm. So I then began to I'd already read a few things on the net and stuff, mm-hmm. but I then really thought, no, I've got to find out what's going on here, mm-hmm. and move forward from there, really.
Right. I mean, and so moving on, I guess you was able at some point to identify these jets. And how were you able to determine their position and height? Because I know once you get involved in something, you tend to get involved in it rather than just wishy-wash over it. So obviously there's a clear determination. So you identified these jets, and I believe it was an easy jet, which is, for those listening in America, is a commercial we would the old bucket seat, you know, it's like a bus, you get on board and away you go. So you was determined, how was you able to determine their position and height?
Well, basically what I initially did was, when I, you know, just step back a little bit from that particular EasyJet thing, but when I saw this grid, I thought, well, some obviously some trails, you know, these trails are made by some sort of aircraft. And so I understood from my limited knowledge of aviation that you have to file a flight plan, mm-hmm. you know, when you're going in an aircraft. And so it wasn't until 2007, actually, that I wrote to the Civil Aviation Authority about that particular incident, giving the date and time of the grid. And I said, well, you know, where did these planes fly from? You know, you must have this on record because of all this nonsense about terrorism and stuff. And they basically wrote back, it's all documented on my website, and said, well, we don't have this information. And I wasn't actually able to get anybody who could tell me which planes had made these trails at a given time. Hmm. Later on, I discovered that there was a device called a virtual radar that you could buy. And I was a bit reluctant to buy one of these. I'd seen one probably in 2005, 2006 or something. And they're about £400, you know, which is probably about $700 or something like that, US listeners and stuff. And so I was a bit reluctant to fork out that amount of money. But eventually I did, and I got one of these things. And basically what it is a device which picks up a signal called ADS-B.
Right.
I can't remember what that means, but it's something like a sideband B signal or something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can find this out on aviation websites. And you basically buy that. It's an off-the-shelf product. You can get them on eBay. I didn't go through any sort of dodgy dealers or anything like that. You can get these things on eBay. It's got an aerial on one end. It's got a USB plug on the other end to plug into your computer or laptop, which is what I did. I put the aerial in my loft. You run some software on the computer, and it basically gives you a simulated air traffic controller's display. So all these, you know, sort of aviation enthusiasts can play pretend air traffic controllers kind of thing. You know, that's kind of, I suppose, the market it's aimed at. But the very good thing is that this thing will actually do is it will log every signal that it picked up into a file. So you can save this onto your hard drive, and it will give you an actual readout of the plane, the airline, the height, the type of aircraft, and various other details, and they're all shown on the screen. You do screen grab, and that's what I did. And so on this particular day, which was the 5th of March 2010, so itself a while ago now, I was outside. I saw a couple of jets go over, and I had my 20 times optical zoom camera, Canon. It's a Canon camera, which is again, I spent a couple of £100 on that. So it's got a very good quality lens, 12 megapixels and so on. And so I got this, I videoed this aircraft, and I looked at it and thought, that looks like an EasyJet. And indeed, based on the readout from the AirNav box, that's what it was. And then an hour later, another EasyJet came over, same height, within 500 feet, same type of aircraft, and so on, same, roughly the same route. I think one was Edinburgh to Stansted, and the other was something like London to Glasgow or something. Very similar UK internal domestic flights. And one of these flights left a huge long trail reaching almost down to the horizon, and the other one left no trail at all. But this is on the same day, within 1 hour of each other. So we have a problem, because if the fact that you get these trails is largely dictated by the height that the aircraft flies at. For example, according to the information that I am aware of, if the aircraft is below 26,000 feet, about that, or 28,000, you don't get a significant contrail.
Right.
It's only above that height. You know, so these aircraft that are taking off and landing at airports, no trails. That's fine. There shouldn't be any trails. You shouldn't see them. And indeed, you don't. If you watch, you won't see them. It's only when you reach a cruising altitude that you get the trails appearing. And indeed, even then, on some days, again, you can look out on some days, and you won't see any trails of any significance at all. Not one. And I now have people writing to me to say, Andrew, we've had this beautiful, clear day here today. It's been amazing because I haven't seen one trail. And I still haven't been able to get a straight answer as to why on some days we see trails and on some days we don't.
Mm-hmm. And presumably you write to EasyJet, and I guess no surprise there, as often happens, as I make my complaints to that other famous company, Ryanair, you're met with stock replies or inaccurate replies. They stifle you. They tell you to move on. as you write in your on your website. Nothing to see here, folks. Go away, please. Don't rock the boat. And presumably this is what you were met with when you approached EasyJet.
Yeah, essentially it was. I mean, I tend not to be very persistent, certainly not as persistent as some people are. So basically what I did was I wrote to by post to ask them, you know, why did this one aircraft leave a trail and why did this other one not? If there's a logical explanation, you know, I'm open to it. I'm not saying that we're definitely being sprayed with poisonous chemicals week in, week out. I can't, to be honest, a lot of people on the internet are saying that, but I certainly can't. I can't confirm it. I can only say it might be happening in some cases. I don't feel it's happening all the time. But so they didn't write back. I wrote to them at by post, no response. I sent them it by email. And they did send me a response, but they said simply, we cannot answer your operational query, which I think is the exact phrase that they used. Okay. So no answers coming back. Mm. To sort of latch on to that a little bit, there's a lady in who's in Europe, and I forget her country of origin, but she lives in Paris now, Saskia Messager, and she did a study of the budget airlines. And she found that in many cases, from the way that she worked it out, they were unviable. They were economically unviable.
Right.
And she wondered if they were being somehow subsidized in some way to get involved in certain activities which they might not be fully disclosing.
Sure.
Now, I wouldn't say she established any proof of this happening, but she certainly came up with some interesting sort of analysis on this, and but people haven't really spoken about this very much.
No.
And she and I certainly share in common that we've tried to, you know, make some measurements. She was, for example, was measuring the economics of the airlines. I was physically, you know, trying to get a measurement of the height of the aircraft, and so on with the scanner, rather than, you know, originally I tried to work it out using an optical method, and it roughly came out right, but it was a right pain, and all you could do was work out the height. You didn't know what the airline was and stuff like that. But, you know, you have to try and pin things down as much as you can. It's very, very difficult, as we know, in this arena of all the stuff that we talk about, to get solid information. So you have to work hard to do that.
Yeah, I mean, because you also approached East Midlands Air Traffic, which I was actually flabbergasted to find out, and as you quite rightly said earlier on, with all the security that we know that goes on at airports, they were unable to tell you what was flying above their territorial skies above 15,000 feet.
Right, that's right. So, and the Civil Aviation Authority also then said that this responsibility for that data is with the National Air Traffic Service, NATS, and I wrote to them as well at the time, and I think somehow the email seemed to go in a black hole, because the response that I got was about some, I mean, it sounds bizarre and people probably wouldn't believe it, but it was about some new age meeting in San Francisco or something. I mean, it didn't make any sense at all. I thought, what the hell is going on? So I didn't get anything out of NATS, National Air Traffic Service, and again, maybe it should be more persistent, but nobody else that I know has had any information from NATS. Nobody's ever written to me to say that they've tried anything similar. So I really don't know what's going on with that.
Right. But with regard the just going back to the ADS-B equipment, I understand that some of it, is that quite right in saying that it actually doesn't record height, namely military planes, I think.
Right. I mean, the ADS-B thing, again, if you read about it, it's not a mandatory thing. They don't have to carry these. I think airlines are obviously carrying it for their own use and stuff like that.
Sure.
But, yes, the military planes apparently don't use the system, or if they do, you can't pick them up on the scanner.
Right.
But I've also seen, when I've done some stats on this, and I need to do more work on this, I'm intended to do a bit more observation with the box this year to get some more hard data. And I found that only about 20% of the aircraft that it picks up broadcast their position. Most of them broadcast their height, but you can only tell when they're within the range of the box, which is about 150 miles as I've got it set up, between 100 and 150 miles depending on which direction the aircraft is coming from. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, you can, I've got, you can, for example, get a roof, you know, rooftop aerial and a bit one with a higher gain, so you can pick up aircraft perhaps from 300 miles or something like that. But obviously, for me, I'm only interested in the aircraft that are within visual range,
sure,
which is probably about 40 miles, something like that would be tops. So I don't think you can see them any more than about 40 miles, and I think it's more like 25 miles as the visual range. So all the aircraft that are outside that range, for my purposes of looking at the trails, I'm not really interested in anyway.
I mean, because you know, you've made all these inquiries so far, and I think you've got something like 8,000 documents. Or you've documented 8,000 pieces of information from your box and websites and emails and stuff like that. You've built up quite a bit of information there.
Mm.
Do you take this any further? Do you write to the government? They almost have this clandestine manner it goes about. I mean, they did issue a report on geoengineering many moons ago, but you know, it all seems to be, it's almost like there's this, what do they call it, this denotice, a voluntary denotice from the mainstream media. It's almost like an agreement, let's not talk about it.
It is very strange. I have written to my MP in the past, that was a few years ago now. I haven't done as much recently, because it does seem that you just get, you know, you literally get the response, you know, Andrew, this is contrails,
yeah,
you know, there's nothing else to it. We can't give you any more information because, you know, there's no point because it is contrails, that's all it is.
Yeah.
And clearly it's not just that.
Yeah.
I don't believe, for example, just to talk about this idea of chemical spraying, mm-hmm. If it was being done by commercial airlines, it's very difficult for me to envisage that is actually what's happening.
Yeah.
Because if you consider the logistics of doing it, there's basically two possibilities, as I see it. One is that somebody is putting something in the fuel, you know, some type of chemical mix or something,
sure,
additive of some kind to create these trails. Mm. But if that was going on, then as you're probably aware, and most people would be aware, a jet engine is a very finely tuned piece of engineering. You know, it runs at high speed, at high temperature for hundreds of hours a week, or, you know, maybe 100 hours out of 1 week, possibly longer. These things are in the air nearly all the time. So you can't afford to have the fuel not, you know, pure enough to run the engine. So just on that basis, I find it very, very difficult to imagine that something is being added to the fuel. That's not to say it's not impossible. It could be being done. It's just that I find it very difficult to accept that that is being done. The other alternative is that we've got some separate type of nozzle system, you know, mounted on the wings or near the engine, which some people claim evidence to the photograph, but again, this seems to be fairly restricted. It doesn't seem that you can identify these nozzles on all civilian aircraft that you see at airports, for example. You know, people get on them every day and
sure,
you can't see these nozzles. And that, of course, would then entail having a separate system of tanks, which then would add weight,
sure,
to the aircraft when it took off, which then would have to be paid for in terms of fuel. So if you think of those questions logically, which not many people do, you know, I mean, I've had another person write to me today say, oh, I'm feeling sick from all these chemtrails. And I don't know. I really don't know. What I think is going on, my best guess at the moment, is that the trails are appearing because of some external factor. In other words, that something in the atmosphere is being externally changed and applied at irregular intervals. And that is why on some days we're seeing lots and lots of trails, and on others, or that's at least part of the reason. I don't think it explains all the evidence. And I think a lot of this idea that we're being sprayed by poisonous chemicals daily, I think some of that at least is been put on the internet to create a lot of fear and uncertainty and this sort of thing. I can't prove that's the case, and I can't prove that this spraying is not going on at all, but I don't think it's going on to the extent that a lot of websites and posters are claiming.
Sure. I mean, the one thing that is very puzzling is, and when I ask people to look up the skies and say, what do they see? They say, oh, the contrails. And I say, well, that's fine. And I say, well, have you ever seen a passenger jet fly in such a disorganized sort of ragbag fashion that you've seen, you know, passenger jets or jets when they turn, apart from when they're in a holding pattern to land, it's a very gentle curve. Some of these chemtrails are making sweeping turns and sweeping curves, and they're crisscrossing each other. And again, you have to say, have you ever seen passenger jets crisscross each other the way these jets are crisscrossing? And again, we get back to what I mentioned at the start of this conversation. The majority of people cannot possibly believe that it's anything else other than contrails. And yeah, this is the dilemma we have. But we've come this far now with these chemtrail issues. We've come a long way from the early days of Cliff Carnicom, where people's lives were threatened who investigated this kind of thing too much. Do you think we've crossed that barrier for good now, and people such as yourself who investigated this are looked upon merely as by the authorities as just a nuisance, that if we keep playing the game we're playing, eventually they'll go away?
I think that's a fairly good observation, really, and I think, you know, if we're seeing a pattern with this and other fields of investigation, like, for example, 9/11, then perhaps, you know, these authorities are realising, and realised in the beginning, that initially they could apply pressure to people to keep these things under wraps, right, but that wouldn't work forever unless they just, you know, went and killed everybody off, which isn't practical doesn't really, I think, achieve what they wanted. So no, I think they've basically taken the view of, we'll threaten a few people initially just to slow things down, but eventually more and more people are going to, you know, wake up to this. So then what they do is they just pile on the disinformation.
Yeah.
And then there's so much disinformation, there really is, that itself is, I think, is the main defense mechanism. And I think just going back to what you were saying about these trails, you know, going in various chaotic ways, that's true. And I, you know, though I've said I'm not convinced about the poisonous spraying, and my idea that this, you know, is externally applied, it doesn't explain some of those things, because we can clearly see, you know, there are some video and there's some pictures of planes doing U-turns. And right, in fact, I've photographed these planes myself. I've got a picture from when I was driving over the Humber Bridge, and this plane is doing a U-turn while leaving a trail. And you can clearly see this.
Right.
And this does not happen because, you know, that doesn't happen because when you're stacked, as you say, when you're stacked, you're below the 26,000 feet ceiling, so you don't get any trails anyway.
Right.
So this idea that it's come from aircraft which is being stacked, it doesn't stack up add a pun. And so we, you know, there is still things like that for which, despite all these years of, you know, Cliff Carnicom and so on, we don't have an explanation as to actually what is going on. And I think that's obviously the difficult thing with the whole issue.
Right. Now, before I leave you, one of your main jobs, if you like, is the investigations into 9/11. And you're, at the moment, you're promoting a book by Dr. Judy Wood. Could you just give the listeners a little bit of information on this, and perhaps in particular the UK listeners, where they can pick up a copy of the book and what they expect to find in the book?
Oh, thank you. Yes. Well, this is really one of the cases where we can get some definite information, thanks to the research of Dr. Judy Wood, where she's gathered together a lot of very clear-cut information from the events of 9/11, mainly at the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
She's basically done a forensic investigation into how the buildings were destroyed, and she has had this on her website, drjudywood.com, for several years now. And the book, which is called Where Did the Towers Go?, attempts to answer the question in the title and how it was done. The results that come out of that study, this sort of 4, 5, 6, 7 year long study, will surprise a lot of people.
Right.
And again, very difficult for some people to swallow. That you can get the book from a website called wheredidthetowersgo.com. That's worldwide, it will ship worldwide.
Right.
I've been distributing it in the UK, so you can get it from checktheevidence.com. It's a 500-page hardback book with 800 pictures and diagrams, everything very clearly laid out and explained, and you'll find some surprising information in there.
Right.
One of the particular things which you folks may not have heard of, which sort of links up to a degree with the chemtrail issue, is the presence of Hurricane Erin, which is covered in the book.
Right.
Now, Hurricane Erin was a Category 3 storm. It headed towards New York City between the 7th and the 11th of September 2001. It ended up closest to New York City at 8 o'clock in the morning, and on the 12th of September it made a right-hand turn and headed off out towards Newfoundland.
Oh.
And there's more information about that both on the in the book and on the website. And basically why I bring that up is I think that is some type of you know, weather control that was going on there, very much so.
Mm.
And that is something which is never talked about in relation to the specific events of 9/11.
That was Andrew Johnson from checktheevidence.co.uk. Now, if you'd like to know more about what we've just discussed, then you can visit Andrew at checktheevidence.co.uk. Now, if you're interested in the shenanigans of 9/11 and you perhaps want to hear another side of the coin, if you want to perhaps get to the truth, then you ought to go to his website, checktheevidence.co.uk, and you will find so much information there. If you are new to this type of thinking, it can be very difficult to accept at first, but Check the Evidence goes through all this thoroughly. If you're not satisfied with that, then there's the book, as we just heard, by Dr. Judy Wood, which you can buy if you're in the United States. You can get it pretty much anywhere. If you are in the United Kingdom, then you can pick it up at checktheevidence.co.uk and you can make interesting research. And perhaps if we keep this in the public arena, eventually we will get to the truth of all these issues. Well, you've been listening to me, Mike Cavalli, at Vitalis News. I'll be back on Monday with another show. In the meantime, do yourself a favour. Just have a look up in the sky and ask yourself, do passenger jets really fly in such a haphazard way? Because I don't think they do. Whatever you're doing, have a great weekend. This is Mike Cavalli signing off. Bye-bye for now.